This is Encounters with the Nawal by Armando Torres. This is part 2, section 1, The Warrior's Dialogue. Conceptual saturation. I once told Carlos once how difficult it was for me to understand the postulates of sorcery and asked him for some definitions which could guide my rationality. But he told me that this was neither possible nor useful, since he didn't live in a reality of ordinary consensus. Not even I understand myself. He assured me with absolute seriousness. He maintained that to comprehend is to fix our attention on a specific point from where things can be explained. The more accepted that point is by people in general, the truer we find it. But the universe is not reasonable. Its essence is beyond all description. Security and common sense are islands floating around in a bottomless sea, and we only cling to them out of fear. If you continue on the path of knowledge, you will soon discover that explanations are placebos, since they never fulfill what they promise. For each thing they clarify, they generate a trail of contradictions. In fact, we never understand anything. True teaching is physical, and we only get it after years of fighting. That is the nature of the lessons of the Nawal. However, sorcerers have found that it is possible to understand things without reasoning them, and that has led them to practice. An hour of practice can sweep years of explanations off the table. And real results appear, results that stay with you forever. As you turn yourself into a witness of power, the obsessive pressure of your mind to be in charge will cancel out. It will be canceled out. And in its place, the childlike spirit of adventure and discovery will be reborn in you. In that state, you don't think anymore, you act. Then he asked me, to what extent my interest in the knowledge of the sorcerers of ancient Mexico was. I assured him that there could be no doubts about my sincerity, and that I was willing to make any effort except to transgress my principles concerning honesty and charity. He shook my hand effusively. "You are the ideal candidate," he exclaimed. I don't know whether he was joking or sincere. To my surprise, he stated that my principles, which were not mine, but those of any intelligent normal person, were a very good base to work from. There are your basic materials, but you know and now have to transform them into an unbending intent, because as long as they just remain good intentions, they won't serve you in any way. After a pause, he added, "I can help you to elucidate the beliefs of the seers of ancient Mexico by means of a combination of studies and experiences." Interpreting my silence as agreement, he continued by describing an action program that I should incorporate in my daily life, based on 3 points: stopping my internal dialogue with the help of pure intent, compacting my energy by means of rearranging my way of life, and loosening the bounds of my mind in order to dream. He said the program was designed to help me loosen a little the collective fixations and encourage me to enter into a practical commitment with the postulates of sorcerers. I accepted his proposal and prepared to listen, but Carlos was anything but a good instructor. When I read his books, at least I had the opportunity to pause and reread a sentence, or to leave everything for later. But when I was right there beside him, his impatience and his uncontainable torrent of words overwhelmed me. Also, he gave the impression that he was avoiding, in every possible way, establishing a human relationship. When I pointed out to him that his method didn't work, he told me that it was a deliberate hunting strategy, a apparently he was stalking the routines of my mind through what he called conceptual saturation. I asked him what he meant by that, and he explained, "Reason becomes saturated when you give it too much content to work with. Don Juan used to say that strange concepts like those sorcerers deal with should be repeated to the point of fatigue. That way they gain a definite place in our awareness, burdened by the weight of so many trivial matters. What scares us in front of sorcerers' lessons is that even if we don't want to, we are constantly evaluating everything that comes to us. When the object of that analysis is an irrational proposition, it requires a lot of power to avoid prejudice. If you want to know the magical side of the world, be implacable with your reason. Don't let it make itself comfortable. Take your rational thoughts to their limit, to the point of rapture, to the point of rupture. Under such circumstances, your mind will only have two options: to impose itself, forcing you to abandon the apprenticeship, or to be quiet, leaving you alone." An inventory of beliefs. "How is your recapitulation going?" His question caught me unaware. I answered that I had still not tried the exercise because I was waiting for conditions at home to be favorable. He gave me a very serious, almost reproachful look and commented that for sorcerers, the totality of a path can be summed up in its first step. That means that the ideal conditions are here and now. Softening the tone of his voice, he granted, "It happens to everyone at first. To observe our life is an agitating exercise, because to get to the bottom of things scares us, and it is easy to postpone it from one day to the next. But if we insist, after a time of scrutiny, we begin to discover that what we always found to be obvious and correct ways of thinking are in fact implanted beliefs. The idea we become addicted to, the ideas we become addicted to are made up of the densest matter in our mental contamination. In general, they all start from a defect of syntax. If the way we speak changes, they stop making sense and are substituted by new ideas. That's why there are so many belief systems in the world. From the center of silent knowledge, we all know that. That's why we are so rarely willing to practice our beliefs. We can spend a lifetime speaking of loving our fellow man or turning the other cheek, but who dares to actually do it? There you have the wars for religious motives, where people are killed because of the peculiar way that they pronounce God's name. Sorcerers know that beliefs based on ideas are false. He explained to me that the starting point of our convictions is usually something that someone told us in an imperative or persuasive tone when we were children, before we had our own inventory of experiences for comparison. Or it is one of the effects of the massive and subliminal propaganda to which modern man is subjugated and subjected to. Frequently, they come from a sudden and deep emotional outburst, like that suffered by those who allow themselves to be swept away by religious hysteria. That modality of belief is merely associative. At the core of each one of our actions, customs, or reactions, there is a hidden belief. Therefore, the initial task on the path of knowledge is to make an inventory of all those things we have placed our faith in." He suggested that I dedicate a new notebook to that exercise, where I should write down all my beliefs. He assured me that this practice would help me make a map of my motivations and attachments. In each case, he said, you should look for the source of your beliefs and make a profound analysis of each one. Determine when and why it arose. What was there before that? How you felt? How much your faith has changed over the years? The intention is not to justify anything, but rather simply to get things clear. This exercise is called stalking the believer. He predicted that the result of the practice would be to liberate me of my second-hand convictions and emphasized that the world of sorcerers, only direct experimentation is valid. Believing without believing. I accepted the exercise because I found it inoffensive. For a couple of weeks, I was devoted to classifying everything with which I felt mentally identified. I hoped my inventory would be simple and clear, but I was soon surprised to find that an endless list of thought patterns appeared, sometimes not very coherent in relation to each other. For example, one of my beliefs was that only when something can be proven and demonstrated, it can be called certain. At the same time, another of my beliefs was that supreme reality, a divine being beyond all experimentation, exists. No matter how much I tried, I could not resolve that contradiction. In the field of non-beliefs, I also had my surprises. The most unpleasant was to discover the way a simple suggestion had blocked an enormous area of possibilities for me. When I began to investigate why it was not honestly possible for me to accept Carlos's statements regarding how, through dreams, you can access other real and complete worlds, I remembered that when I was a child and had a nightmare, my mother used to repeat the refrain of a children's story which said, "Dreams are just dreams." When we met again, I gave him a superficial account of the results of my investigations. Carlos told me that it was enough. There was already sufficient material to attack the second part of the exercise. Then he suggested that I select the most important one of my beliefs, which served as a base to all other ones, and stop believing it for a moment. I should do this with each one of them, according to their degree of importance. I assure you that it is not difficult, he added, seeing my bewildered face, and above all, it won't harm your faith. Remember, it is only an exercise. I protested in a decisive tone. I told him that the basis of my principles was my certainty that God exists and that I was not willing to question or even analyze that point. It is not true, he screamed. Your most ingrained conviction is that you are sinful, and for that reason you are justified. You can make mistakes, squander your energy, and give in to anger. Lasciviousness, whims, and fear. After all, you are human, and God always forgives you. Don't fool yourself. Either you choose your belief, or it chooses you. In the first case, it is authentic. It is your ally. It sustains you, and it allows you to manipulate it at will. In the second case, it is an imposition and not worthwhile. I replied that the exercise he proposed, treating my faith as casually as a man changing his shirt, was not only blasphemous and mercenary, but the practice would probably end up throwing me into a state of internal confusion. He observed, "You don't have to be clear to enter the world of sorcerers. Our idea that truth goes hand in hand with clarity is a trap, because the spirit is too inaccessible to be understood with our fragile human mind. As you well know, the essence of religion is not clarity, but faith. But faith is worth nothing in comparison with experience. Sorcerers are practical. From their point of view, what we believe or stop believing is absolutely irrelevant. The stories that we tell ourselves don't matter, in the least. What matters is the spirit. When there is power, the content of the mind is something secondary. A sorcerer can be an atheist or a believer, Buddhist, Muslim, or Christian, and yet cultivate impeccability, which automatically brings him to power. His words irritated me beyond reason. When I realized it, I was surprised to find how deeply the Catholic doctrines I learned during my childhood had penetrated. Now that Carlos questioned them, it felt as if he was unfairly robbing me of something very valuable. He noticed my dilemma and began to laugh. "Don't confuse things," he told me. "Religions are not remedies, but consequences of the pitiful state of awareness man is in. They are replete with good intentions, but very few people are prepared to fulfill them. And their commitment, if their commitment meant anything of real value, the world would be full of saints, not sinners. The moment ideologies, including novelism, become widespread, they become cultural mafias, schools to make people sleepy. No matter how subtle their postulates are, and no matter how much they try to validate them with personal corroboration, they end up conditioning our actions according to some form of reward or punishment, and by doing that, they pervert the very essence of the search. If the pillar of my faith is a salary, what merit does it have?" Sorcerers love the purity of the abstract. For them, the value of the path with heart is not so much where it takes us, but how intensely we enjoy it. Faith certainly has a value in ordinary life, but it is useless against death. Our only hope when facing the inevitable is the warrior's path. Sorcerers call the ability to manipulate their mental attachments believing without believing. They have perfected that art to the point where they can identify sincerely with any idea, live it, love it, and discard it if it comes to that, without remorse. And inside that freedom of choice, they ask sorcerers questions. For example, "Why accept myself as a sinner if I can be impeccable?" After some resistance, I agreed with Carlos and that there could not be anything wrong with subjecting my beliefs to a shake. What I found to be the main effect of this technique of believing without believing was that it showed how incredibly fragile my catalog of ideas was. It was prone to disintegrate at the slightest blow. I understood why Don Juan claimed that the world we live in is a magic fabric, the magic of the first ring of power.